Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. The city of Denver uses bond dollars to grab up a building for affordable housing without first checking to see if affordable housing can go in there.
It does seem like a quick move that isn't in the best interest of the Denver residents.
Can Attorney General Phil Weiser lead Colorado without the power to bring three lawsuits a week? Why did Senator Michael Bennett support so many Trump nominees? Good questions. You'll hear their answers from the Democratic gubernatorial debate. And we'll get on our horse and ride around town, asking Coloradans the question that takes us home each Friday, setting aside the news headlines for whatever is good in the lives of our neighbors.
Yeah, I got a new grandbaby.
Hey, congrats. That's tonight on Next. Denver's voters approved $45 million to quickly build affordable housing, part of the vibrant Denver Bond Project. The city's using the money to buy an office building with no plan, no budget estimate, and no timeline to actually turn it into affordable housing. But other than that, the whole thing's buttoned up tight. Here's Spencer Soischer with the story.
Denver voters were sold a promise when Mayor Mike Johnston was pitching the Vibrant Denver Bond last year.
We are going to focus on really shovel-ready projects that are can be transformational and catalytic for neighborhoods.
Remember this claim.
Where we can get shovels in the ground quickly.
As we tell you that this week, the city council voted to approve spending $4.5 million in bond money on this former state office building in Cap Hill. The plan is to convert this building into housing, but the city has no plan for what that'll look like, how much work it will need, or when it'll happen.
If the city was my client, if the residents were my client, and I was their real estate agent, I would never let them buy a house without an inspection, and that's what we're doing.
Flor Alvidres, the councilwoman for District 7, was the only council member to vote no.
I don't see a way to vote yes on something I don't have a feasibility study on.
The city has tried this before. In 2023, it spent $9 million to buy the old stay-in motel near Peoria and I-70 to house people experiencing homelessness. The city expected people to move in within 6 to 12 months. 3 years later, nobody lives there.
I hear what you're saying about other properties. I think this is an exception.
The former state office building is in Councilmember Chris Hines' densely populated District 10.
It's the right thing to make sure that we have expensive land like this being used for the most pressing need, and right now that's housing.
The city plans to put the building out to developers who may be on the hook for conversion costs, but shovel ready?
If we're intentional, this money can change lives. But if we buy buildings that are going to stay empty and vacant and that people aren't going to know what to do with, we're not moving the needle.
Alvidres' biggest concern is that a developer looks at this building and decides the conversion costs are too high to make low-income housing work. A city spokesperson said after the sale closes, staff will conduct, quote, a more detailed analysis. The city hopes to close by the end of the month and then ask for bids. That's the only timeline for this project, Kyle.
I too like to make big purchases and then do a detailed analysis immediately afterward. Tell me about the particular draw of this site, this geographic location.
So Councilman Chris Hines was saying this particular area is so densely populated, Golden Triangle, Capitol Hill, that the people who actually work there can't afford to live there. He wants this to be somewhere around the 60% median area income for who this targets. And if firefighters, nurses, aides at the Capitol can't afford to live there right now, he'll take whatever housing they can get in that area.
Good goal. We'll see if it works out. You'll be watching, Spencer Soischer. Thank you. Democratic primary debate for governor is now in the books. Unlike the Republican primary debate earlier this week, last night's debate did not involve discussions of exorcisms, executions for treason, and an imaginary invading army. It did involve direct questions to Senator Michael Bennett and Attorney General Phil Weiser, like how AG Weiser is going to be able to lead without the ability to sue President Trump every Tuesday.
Mr. Weiser, I'm sure you know the saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
You have wielded the legal hammer of the Attorney General's office to pound a lot of nails through lawsuits over the last 8 years, but you won't have that hammer if you're elected governor. Why should Coloradans be confident that you can lead and govern without the primary tool that you have used over and over and over again?
When I took on the opioid crisis, I did take on big pharma, companies like Purdue Pharma, Johnson & Johnson, and more, and I brought back $900 million to Colorado. But here's the important part, Kyle. What happened next? I didn't say my job is done. I worked with people like Raquel Garcia. Raquel is an advocate who leads in peer support. And I listened. I said to Raquel, how do we build more peer counseling to help people live in recovery? And across the state, we brought everybody together, a community of practice that didn't exist before I was Attorney General, a community of practice that now exists to address the crisis.
We also asked Senator Bennett last night to explain to Democratic primary voters why only seven Democratic senators supported more of President Trump's cabinet picks than Bennett.
The easiest vote in America is to vote against one of Donald Trump's nominees. But when it's the right thing to do for Colorado, when it's the right thing to have the resources that we need and the attention that we need, I've done that. And even as recently as last week, I convened all the Western Democrats and Republicans in the Senate to meet with the Secretary of Agriculture and the Secretary of Interior to make sure that Alaska has the fire resources they need, to make sure that Arizona has the fire resources they need, and that Colorado will have the fire resources we need again. So that is the answer to your question.
Bennett and Weiser both gave Democratic Governor Jared Polis mixed grades. They praised him for universal pre-K. They criticized his clemency for Tina Peters and his veto of a bill to crack down on the sale of drugs and weapons on social media. You can see the full hour-long commercial-free debate and the GOP debate on 9news.com or the next YouTube channel. One more primary debate to go. We are hosting the only televised debate between the Democrats vying for the chance to face Republican Representative Gabe Evans in the super-competitive 8th Congressional District. State Rep. Manny Rutenell and former State Rep. Shannon Byrd debate live here, 9 News, Monday at 6 p.m. Hey, a quick note about tonight's program. We are broadcasting on both Channel 9 and Channel 20 at the moment. If you're watching on Channel 20, we will turn you over to Rockies Baseball at 6:15. If you're watching on 9 News, next will continue as usual through 6:30. So as a result, our commercial breaks will be at different than usual times, but we have just as much time to talk about the news here as on any other night.
We're probably the last holdouts, and none of us want this.
If you don't want to switch to XL's smart meter, it'll cost you, like thousands of dollars cost you, perhaps. And after a court reversed the convictions of paramedics involved in the death of Elijah McClain, a juror in the case says he stands by their decision. Meteorologist Corey Rappenhagen, tonight's weather is what anybody would look for in a dating app match, right? Hot, but surprisingly nice.
That's exactly right, and that is what we have, and that's for the Rockies game tonight. So the beginning of the game, a little uncomfortable, a little hot there, but the clouds are starting to show up. We could even get a little bit of a shower running through the games between 7 and 8 o'clock, so overall pretty painless. Really no great weather for baseball. Here's the live radar picture right now. We do have one thunderstorm that is quickly falling apart as it moves across I-70 down here to the southeast of Denver. A couple of little showers down in the South Metro. This is the type of stuff that we're likely to see over the next 2 hours. Pretty painless stuff there, mostly just a few sprinkles coming from those. And that's what we'll continue to see. And then tomorrow is going to be our first 90-degree day of 2026. 92 in Denver. Lots of 90s on the board. We had 47 of those last year, and that is right about on average. On average, we're about 45 for a year. So we'll get number one tomorrow, number two on Sunday. One small blip in the jet stream we'll watch on Monday for some thunderstorm activity. Right now it doesn't look too bad. And then a couple more 90s likely Tuesday and Wednesday. So this week is going to feel a lot like summer, Kyle.
Corey, thank you. Coming up for everybody who is sticking with Next on Channel 9, XL wants everyone to have one of those new smart meters, whether you like it or not. One customer is running into a $1,000 obstacle as he tries to rage against the machine. All right, it's time for Rockies baseball for everybody who is watching on Channel 20. Hot night at the ballpark as the Rocks host the Milwaukee Brewers. Our Colorado Rockies have won back-to-back series after losing a brutal 9 series in a row clear back to April. It's going to be a good night for the Rocks. One of the jurors who returned a guilty verdict against the two paramedics for the death of Elijah McClain says he's shocked and saddened by an appeals court decision to throw out the convictions.
Now it's just a gaping wound again. The scab is gone and it's oozing.
Barry Hubbard was one of the jurors who convicted two Aurora paramedics of criminally negligent homicide for McClain's death. In 2019, Aurora police officers stopped McClain as he was walking home from a convenience store. McClain had done nothing wrong that night. Officers still threw him to the ground. Paramedics injected him with ketamine. Yesterday, a state court tossed out the conviction, said the jurors had not been properly instructed before deliberations. Hubbard says he and the other jurors were never confused about their choice.
I didn't feel as though there was something that, you know, I wanted to raise my hand and say, wait a minute, that makes sense. And nobody else was in that same situation. So that's what I'm really hoping to try to figure out from this is, how far off were we?
The appeals court ordered that the paramedics have a new trial. Democratic Attorney General Phil Weiser says he's going to appeal. That could significantly delay any new trials. Xcel is nearly done swapping out those old spinny dial meters with one of two options: smart meters that send your usage information directly to Xcel, and non-communicating meters that need to be read in person. A customer in Aurora wants the non-communicating kind, but he told our Marshall Zellinger he was informed it would cost him five figures.
So here is my current meter.
It's unique to see an electric meter inside someone's home.
Xcel claims that this meter can be read from outside.
Nev wants to opt out of Xcel Energy's smart meter, but if he gets the non-communicating kind, it will no longer be read by Xcel driving by the house. Someone will have to read it in person, and because of that, it has to be outside.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. If I have a meter that they've been reading for 29 years just by being outside in a vehicle, the new non-communicator meters don't have that technology.
He just got a disconnect notice, giving him until mid-June to schedule an appointment to swap out meters or lose power. 1.6 million Xcel customers have accepted newer Xcel meters. Nev is one of fewer than 5,000 who still have legacy meters. He knows opting out of a smart meter means an extra charge, almost 12 bucks a month, and he's not happy about that either. But not as much as the added cost of having to move a meter outside, one he doesn't even want replaced.
And the estimates I've received are between $10,000 and $20,000 from the electrician.
He filed a complaint with the Public Utilities Commission, and ultimately the PUC decided the complaint did not allege anything that violates a law or rule. In a statement, Xcel said the company owns the meter itself, but the box and internal wires are owned by the customer as approved by the PUC. That's why the cost would be on Nev to move it outside.
If they're forcing me to take a non-communicating meter, which I'm having to pay almost $12 a month, for the rest of my life, the very least they can do is to pay for this.
If you have a meter in your home still, I'd love to hear from you, Marshall@9news.com, or from an electrician that can tell me if it should really cost $10,000 or more dollars. Kyle, I'm baffled by Xcel. Legacy meters with the spinny things, they can send info to cars driving by. That's like connecting to the internet with a DSL cable. The smart meters are like high-speed Wi-Fi. The opt-out non-communicating meter is like dial-up because a person now has to get out of the car that used to just be able to drive by and read the spinny thing and without having to go in person.
And the opposition to these new smart meters is like Big Brother stuff. They think people are tracking them, watching them through the meters.
Yeah, concerns about safety, privacy, perhaps some fire issues, health issues.
Interesting. And it's like a handful of holdouts. Marshall Zellinger, thank you. This week starts the seventh year of your Word of Thanks microgiving. It was 6 years ago, June 2020, when your very first weekly microgiving campaign raised $90,000 to restore and repair Civic Center Park after protests there turned to riots. And since then, you've raised $18 million to improve our state. This week, let's help feed our neighbors in a rural part of Colorado. This week's sixth anniversary Word of Thanks microgiving campaign supports Gunnison Country Food Pantry. That nonprofit keeps working families fed in Gunnison, Crested Butte, and the surrounding rural areas. They have a tourism-based economy, and the resulting high cost of living means that the families that rely on this nonprofit food pantry are often working several jobs and still can't make ends meet. They serve one in five families in Gunnison County with their no-cost grocery program and their take-home food packs for kids. The folks at the Gunnison Country Food Pantry told me Their setup, their purpose, right, is to catch people who fall through the cracks of government assistance. But as more people fall through ever-widening cracks, they have simply been overwhelmed. They also told me that people in the Gunnison Valley are not going to let their neighbors go hungry. I think we can rally the whole state to chip in to help. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491. We'll shoot you that link to donate. Even $5 helps when a ton of people do it. And a bunch of you, 8,000 nearly, have signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. You just set it and forget it. You put in your info one time, pick a donation amount, and we split it automatically among all the nonprofits we feature. So you help everybody. And that's added almost $50,000 per week. Back here with your feedback and your good news next. No long faces allowed on Fridays. For nearly 500 weeks now, we've been closing out each week with your good news. We will make an exception for one long face today, as photojournalist Tom Cole visited the Good Samaritan Society in Loveland.
People love it. Yeah, the elders look forward to it.
It's just an hour of pure joy for the residents.
I love visiting with the elders, and I love hearing their stories.
My good news is that I get to be with Jackie and Clyde and the elders today.
Hi, how are you today?
I like seeing Clyde when he comes over here. He cheers everybody up.
The good news is there's folks like Jackie and her team who spend the...
Mr. Clyde, come say hi.
Time and effort it takes to bring these animals in to create that joy for folks who live in our building.
Yeah, you're beautiful.
Isn't he handsome?
Yeah, because, you know, they're in a skilled nursing facility. They don't get to touch animals very often. The softness is really special. The smell, the stories. Horses have such big hearts. They just really welcome us into their space.
My good news is we got a puppy.
The good news is I'm going in for my second operation on my hand. Yeah, I got a new grandbaby.
My good news is there are kind people in the world today, and don't we forget it.
Thanks, everybody.
Got the loveliest note from a viewer named Joe, who said that today is exactly 50 years since he arrived in Colorado. Joe writes, Colorado's had many changes in the last 50 years, but the biggest thing not to change is the people. They are, without a doubt, the friendliest and most welcoming people I've ever met. I'm so glad that 50 years ago, I made the decision to raise a family in one of the friendliest and most beautiful states in the Union. Doesn't that just make you feel good? Something tells me Joe also contributed to making this a very friendly place to live. This could be my favorite piece of feedback that we've received in a while because it actually made me laugh out loud tonight. Mike writes in, not many people can pull off a pink jacket. And unfortunately, neither can you. I'm going to be thinking about that all weekend, and I'll see you for the debate on Monday.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.